here and welcome to the Pack Heavy podcast. Now, this podcast is for anyone who works in the hospitality and food manufacturing industries who use flexible packaging to get their products to market. Featuring interviews with guests who have traveled the path that you're on so that you can learn from their successes and failures and engage in the mindset required to go all in on your vision. I call this mindset the Pack Heavy mentality, and it's primarily driven by deliberate action and extreme organization. You gather market intelligence, put a strong plan in place, organize the appropriate resources, and then confidently test your hypothesis against reality. So if you're ready to pack heavy on your vision, you're in the right place, and I'm excited to have you here. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to episode 43, where today I'm joined by Lola Adeyemi, who is the founder and chief superwoman at It's Super. Before we do start with the show, though, I did want to briefly mention that this week I was really fortunate enough to have attended Andrea Gray Grant's From the Ground Up trade show and conference. It was held at the P&E here in Vancouver, and I've got to say, Andrea and her team put on such a great show. It was really nice to get out there and be a part of the community that's being built here in Vancouver. It's really, really strong. And I guess the whole basis of the trade show and the conference was to give, you know, all of these small scale and local producers and processors, you know, a heads up and a hand in entering into the market. And I've got to say, like, it was awesome. Like, just to get out in front of people and hear their stories and, you know, the amount of time and energy that you're all putting into your businesses is just inspirational. And it was just really nice to do a face-to-face and shake hands and taste everybody's food. I was highly inspired by it. And I guess the other thing that I really enjoyed was meeting a lot of you who listen to this podcast. One of the things that I find with the podcast is each week you put it out into the world and you don't actually hear much back. So at the trade show, it was so cool to meet a few of you who do listen week in and week out, and I'm so grateful and appreciative for you and the support that you provide me with. So yeah, thank you very much for taking the time to say hello. And the other great thing is that I have managed to tee up a lot of great interviews with a lot of these local food processors. And yeah, some great episodes and stories to come. So keep an eye out, or an ear out, you could say, for that. On with the show. But before we do that, we need to briefly chat about our show sponsor, which is Foodpak. Now, it's important to remember that your packaging is the first and most meaningful interaction that your consumer will have with your product. And we say that all the time here at Foodpak. And I actually mentioned that during today's episode. Now, at Foodpak, we do focus exclusively on what your vision and needs are, and we work really hard to deliver a flexible packaging solution that serves its purpose properly at the right price. So if you're looking to get into the market for the first time, or you'd like to assess your existing packaging and a program, I recommend that you get in touch with me directly by emailing me at hayden@foodpak.ca or by giving me a call on my work cell, which is 604-360-6790, and I would love to see how I can help you out. Okay. Now, launched in 2018 and located in Toronto, Ontario, Lola's Afro Fusion Gourmet Soup and Sauce line was inspired by the fusion of cultures that exist in Canada, a yearning for authentic flavors from Africa, and a desire to share it with her community. Their mission is to produce delicious tasting soups, meals, and sauces made with high quality ingredients and exotic flavors that meet the demands of today's diverse world, and ultimately to inspire a newfound love for food. Lola's soup can be found in over 50 plus retailers in and around the GTA and Quebec, and online at itssuper.com. Lola and I cover the full spectrum of the It's Super startup story on this episode, including the challenge of selling what is typically considered a seasonal product, selling into her first retail locations, and how she approaches competing against established brands. Other key takeaways include the value of in-store demos now that they're back in play, and how she focused on brand building and marketing exercises when they weren't an option. Lola provides great insight into the grants that have been available to her and leverage to assist in scaling her business, and what she considers the most critical components to focus on when working through the application process. Once again, another really great conversation with another food producer. So much to be learnt and taken away by Lola and all of her experience. So I will get out of the way and hope that you enjoy the show. Cheers. Lola, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Hayden. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah, me too. Thank you very much. I'm excited as well. Sarah from More Granola once again has put me in touch with somebody in her network, and today it's you that we're having a conversation with.
Sarah is awesome.
Isn't she? Yeah.
Yeah, she is.
Yeah, she's her business is booming at the moment, and I'm keeping a close eye on it on all the social media handles, but also LinkedIn as well. And I think she just saw some success at a pitching event.
Yes, for Venture Park or something.
Yeah,
I think so.
Yeah, cool.
Venture Labs, I can't remember. Yeah, but yeah. pretty good for her. She's obviously the granola category is very competitive, but she has a very, you know, unique selling point for her. So I think that's very attractive to people.
100%. And a beautiful brand and packaging that she's built around it as well, and a story. So yeah, it sort of ticks all of the boxes in that respect. So it's super. It's going to be a great story, and I'm looking forward to digging in with into it with you. I guess the real reason that I wanted to have a chat with you is because the first thing that I noticed when I jumped onto your website is your beautiful brand as well. Really vibrant, lots of color. So it's going to naturally stand out on the retail shelf. But I also wanted to sort of dig into your past working history, because you've got a great amount of experience out there in the corporate world that I can see that you're obviously bringing through into It's Super. And you've had a lot of success recently with some funding and some grants. So I think that there's a lot that can be learned there and that we can pick your brain on as well. But before we kick off, like every episode, let's start right at the start and ask where you're from. Where'd you grow up?
So I am from Lagos, Nigeria. Nigeria is a country in West Africa. Right. And it's, you know, just on Lagos, it's on the Atlantic. So I grew up, you know, going to the beach on holidays, and I'm a city girl. I moved to Canada to continue my education. So I came here for university, and I went to Winnipeg, believe it or not. So from hot tropical environment to freezing temperatures. Winnipeg was great. It's more kind of like a small city with, like, you know, a good university community, and it was a great place to focus and just be done, kind of get done with school. And then I moved here after university, and started my career from there.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And so you did a Bachelor in Arts?
Yes. So I studied writing and communications. And while I was doing that, I was like, okay, I'm an immigrant. I'm not going to possibly get a role to be a presenter on CTV News. That's not going to happen for me. I don't know anyone. I don't have the network. So what can I do? And for me, as an international student, I was just looking for how I can make money.
Survive.
So I got a job working at investors, like an investment firm. And that's how I kind of moved my career, working in investments. And from investments, I moved into the back office of technology and software, and then from there moved into IT consulting. So which is kind of what I did up until It's Super, up until now actually. I still work in IT.
So what was the motivating factor to go out on your own and try something new? Because from what I can see, you don't have any history of working in the hospitality industry. So
not at all.
Totally new industry. Yeah.
Yes. And if I did, maybe I wouldn't have started. So ignorance, as they say, is bliss. And it was a good thing I didn't know too much about the industry, because I probably would have been too scared to start. But I wanted to just, aside from filling the void culturally, which I stayed on my site and everything, I think I just wanted to fill a void inside as well, because, you know, I've been in IT for so long. I needed to just have something else that I could do that could excite me. I'm good in IT. I mentor people, but, you know, the excitement for me wasn't like the way I have right now with food. So, and what ignited that was because while I was thinking, and it was marinating about like what I could do and what idea I could bring forward, I thought, wait, you know, while I was working in IT, we would have potlucks. And because I always wanted to share my culture, I'm such a fan of my culture and of our food, I would always bring my African food. So I would bring jollof rice, I'll bring plantains, I'll bring, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, bring our pepper sauce. And my Tupperware was always empty. Like people were fighting to take whatever was left home. Like, you know, so I was always so proud and happy. And when people asked me where they could get my type of food to buy, I couldn't really direct them where to go. Mm-hmm. There are Nigerian restaurants, but they were not easily accessible.
Yeah.
And I couldn't either tell them to go to the mainstream Sobeys or local Whole Food store and say, hey, you can pick up this sauce, pick up that rice and make something.
Yeah.
So I thought, wow, there's a huge gap. You know, African ready to eat CPG, African inspired or African foods that are authentic and are not, you know, that are authentic and not just, you know, made by someone claiming, you yeah. know, the African recipes are African, mm-hmm. Are non-existent, basically, pretty much. So I thought I could fill that void. And I started with soups because, you know, the Canadian culture or North American mindset is that soup is for when it's cold. But for mm-hmm. us, we eat soups and sauces every day of the year. So yeah. Because they're hearty, soups are the main meal, actually, for us. It's the focus of the meal. The soup is the meal. And then the yam or plantain, cassava, whatever you eat it with, or the fufu you eat it with, the pudding, eat it with, is just to, you know, enjoy the soup with. So for us, soup is the main focus. And you get excited by the soup. So I wanted to change, you know, that mindset of what soup is, and bring more hearty, flavorful, spicy soups. I mean, I love cream of mushroom. I love tomato basil, but there's only so much of it you can have. And so I wanted to shake up the soup aisle and bring something more interesting.
That's awesome. So you launched in December 2018. So you've yes. had coming up 3-4 years in operation. Being a soup product, and you were saying that, you know, it's something that you guys eat all throughout the year back home. Have you noticed the seasonality of the product over here and the peaks and troughs as you are riding throughout the year?
Yeah, so that's been one of the main struggles. So when we launched, you know, obviously, you know, soup season. So it was good. And I launched in mom and pop stores. So
yeah.
Launching a project meant, like, you know, we're going into a couple of, you know, stores. I was pitching to some small stores. There was obviously always that kind of hesitation, like, oh, okay, what is a Moroccan soup? Or even then I didn't have Moroccan. I had like a chicken peanut. I had a pepper soup. I had some other SKUs that I have had to kind of stop for different reasons. Like our chicken peanut was our bestseller. But I had to stop because now I'm with a co-packer and I couldn't scale up with that because of the peanut allergen. So things like that are decisions I had to make that have been a struggle. But with the seasonality, it's been a major thing for me to basically see our sales go like basically almost nosedive in the summertime because people are just not looking for soups. Even the yeah. buyers are saying, come back in the fall.
Yeah.
We're like only have like our own in-house SKUs or soups just for the summer, and then the fall will sell again. And especially for a new brand, for established brands like Happy Planet, they would sell through the summer. But you know, for us, it's just continuously trying to market that in the summertime. So that has been one of the key struggles that we've had, and why we do sell in the summer. Like we launched Whole Foods and Sobeys this year, actually in the spring, and we've sold through the summer, but we did see the same thing where the sales in the summertime goes, you know, half of what you sell normal other times, just like, you know, ice cream. Yeah. I don't have as much ice cream in the wintertime like I do in the summer. So
yeah.
I think it's just sometimes that, you know, there are times when you want something warm and there are times when you want something colder. So yeah
no, you're totally right, and I think that's something that a lot of people would encounter. I'm interested to hear whether you've you know, leveraged your network and actually like spoken to other people that are working in similar industries to you that do encounter these peaks and troughs throughout the season.
So the interesting thing about the soup category is it's either they're like, are you speaking specifically about the soup category?
Well, any really, like you just brought up ice cream, and I'm wondering, you know, you know, businesses mm-hmm. must diversify. Like they must have yeah. to look at alternative means of generating revenue throughout that period just so they can survive. So, you know, yeah. they look at alternative products. And I was just wondering whether you've managed to have a conversation with anybody out there around, you know, how it is that they've gone about it.
I think, you know, for me personally, soups, and like I said, we have soups and we also have sauces. Now, I only started with once. Okay, so let me first answer your question.
Yeah.
So you talk to people in the industry, and ice cream is a whole different category. And most times when people have ice cream, they only just, they're ice cream makers. And so they are already prepared for that time when, you know, things are not as, you know, are not selling at peak.
Yeah.
And so they probably do a lot more marketing, a lot more ways to entice people, put it in your coffee, mm-hmm. make a latte. It's all about marketing and branding in a way whereby you realize that ice cream isn't just for, you know, having it as a dessert. You can actually make it with other things. That's what I found that a lot of people do. And that's a lot of the stuff that we've done as well, trying to educate. In the summertime, we showed people they can use our sauces, our soups for tacos, because they're hearty. It's not water, broth, and vegetables.
Yeah.
They're very hearty soups. So you can use them as a base to make other things. And so a lot of the education is in our recipes, on our Instagram, where you can make a chili sandwich, a chili burger, a hot dog with our chili, or you can make a Moroccan taco and stuff like that. We have all those recipes on our Instagram. So it's a way to kind of educate people and see our, even though we call them soups, see our product not just as a soup line, right? Mm-hmm. And then our sauces, right now we have one sauce, which we sell in kind of on shelf with the soups because it's just that one SKU that is a sauce. One of the ways that we're combating situation with seasonality is launching more sauces. So that way we have a line of sauces, and people eat sauce all year. And even more in the summer because they're barbecuing and all that. So when the soups are not selling as much, we have our sauces to back that up as well. So we kind of expand our line of sauces. We also want to have marinades, condiments, and like spices as well, because we actually import our spices directly from Nigeria, Africa.
Wow.
And so, yeah, because our spices, you can't find African spices readily available in retail as well. And our spices are very unique. And so that's one of the categories as well that we want to get into. So
cool.
We'll have like more shelf stable options. We'll have, you know, ambient options of products and a variety. I think when you have a variety, it helps with balancing seasonality of some of the SKU.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. You're absolutely right. You know, those unique spices, you know, to be able to have access to those, and you were suggesting there's no compensation for it. That's really cool to know that there's also something unique that you can bring into the marketplace that you can you know, call your own.
Exactly.
That's cool. We jumped ahead a little bit, and that's totally cool because the thread of the conversation was there for the taking. But let's just go back to the very, very start where you knew that there was an opportunity because there was nothing else like it in the market. You were, you know, obviously getting some really great feedback from your colleagues at the potluck that, you know, they loved what you were doing. At what point were you like, you know what, this is something that I actually want to do for a living, and, you know, I'm considering stepping away from the corporate world and actually jumping headfirst into this? Like, what was the deciding factor in there, and how did you go about making that decision?
Great question. The funny thing is when you said do it for a living, I don't know if I'm leaving off this right
now.
Yeah. You know how it is. It's a startup and like swallowing money
Scrapping.
More than it makes. For me, I think the way the idea came to me was kind of like just like a flood, and it was very kind of emotional for me. Like, I thought of the name, I thought of the logo, I thought of like everything all at once. It came to me like kind of like a flood. I'm like, I'm going to launch a line of soups. I'm going to call it a Tsupa. And I went on Google and I searched and I saw that, wait, how is it possible that this name isn't taken? Like, so I booked the website, I booked everything. And then I'm like, wait, okay, so what am I doing exactly? Like a soup line? Like, does that even make any sense? And then I started doing some research because, like you said earlier, I didn't have any industry experience. And so I didn't know how to get from point A to Z. And I wanted to be able to launch this brand in a way whereby I wasn't stuck in the flea market. I didn't want to be just like, you know, a small brand. I had a vision to, you know, be able to compete with, you know, the bigger brands. And so I wanted to launch well. And so I started doing some research, and I found this NGO at the time called Food Starter that that helped some brands with like a kind of a program where you could do a feasibility and get some information. Mm-hmm. And through that program, even though the program, while I was there, I was actually losing my confidence because I was the only Black woman in the program, but not even just that, because I was, my food was also African, and everybody around me had this like vegan, gourmet, like, you know, very brands that to me, I felt like, okay, mine isn't vegan. Mine isn't like, you know, this, you know, fluffy, like beautiful sounding thing. It's like African soups and sauces. Like, how can I brand myself where I'm likable? And I felt out of place.
Yeah.
And so I lost a bit of my confidence because I felt like, okay, are people really going to like my brand? Are people really going to like this? Like, you know, because nobody else in this room has a recipe like me. I didn't think about it as an advantage. I thought about it as like being the loner there. So, but the turning point for me was at the end of the program. You had a one-on-one with a mentor, and I, because of that experience, I lay so much emphasis, especially in the BIPOC community, to have mentorship in the industry, because I can count on my hands how many CPG brands are Black owned and well known. So, but this mentor is a white guy, he British guy, and very like to the point. And he was like, oh my God, I told him the story. I showed him my logo. I presented to him. And he's like, oh my God, I love this idea. Like soup, you know, the soup industry needs a refresh. They need something new. They need vibrant stuff like this. I love your logo. I love your name. Go for it. Like, you know, do it. And I left that meeting that day and I called my husband. I'm like, oh my God, I'm doing it. I'm doing it. And that was it. That was the turning point. So for me, if I didn't have that meeting, maybe I don't know, maybe I would have, maybe I was already kind of losing track of my vision. I was thinking, okay, maybe I should do a food truck. Maybe if I do a food truck, then maybe people will understand African cuisine. And then from there, maybe I can, but I was never the kind of person who wanted to do the brick and mortar restaurant business, because a lot of African and Black owned food businesses are brick and mortar. I didn't want that. I wanted easy, ready to eat, easy to start to finish kind of product. And so I was already getting distracted from my original vision because of how I felt out of place. And so that mentor meeting, 1 hour after weeks of having sessions and not feeling like I was doing on the right path, just 1 hour with a mentor who was an industry expert changed the trajectory of what I was going to do. So that was the turning point for me. And that meeting was in like April 2018. I was like, okay, I'm going to do this. And I officially like, you know, did the incorporation. I started doing my research, started creating my design and all that. And then until I launched in December.
That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, to go back to the start, and, you know, you mentioned that you would try and redirect people as to where they could go to get this food in the grocery store, and there wasn't an option. So you sort of knew it right from the very, very start, but I think you just probably needed reminding and, you know, have somebody believe in you and believe in your idea. And then all of a sudden that confidence took off in you. And I think that's probably a similar story with a lot of people, you know, to have somebody that's considered, you know, knowledgeable in the industry to go, yeah, you're actually onto something and this is a really good idea. And it's obvious that you've owned your space as well. Like, I recommend everybody goes on to the website. It's super.com. Have a look and you'll know exactly what I mean about the color and the vibrancy and all the beautiful looking soup. Like in Australia, we call a thick looking soup like that a casserole. you know, it is a meal. And I know exactly what you mean by centering, you know, the dish around actually being the star of the meal. And it looks delicious. I just, I had lunch not long ago, and when I was on your website this morning, I'm like, I need to have some lunch before we kick off. So, you got started with the business. Now, were you actually, did you get operational in a commissary kitchen and you were actually doing all of the production?
Okay. Yes. Oh my God. I that was another huge learning curve. A lot of hours standing. It was a painful process. And actually, so when I started in like, you know, December, January, 2019, I'll do production. I would save it frozen and then take some samples to stores. And one of the learning things I had to learn was like, people would not automatically, I felt like, okay, I'll go to a store. People love the product and people will just, that was a huge learning point for me because I would go to like 20 doors and maybe one person would be like, okay, maybe I'll try it, you know? I had to realize that I shouldn't take it personal, but after spending hours in the kitchen, standing and cooking this thing with my heart and with love and everything, I just expected that it would just fly on the shelves. Yeah. And that wasn't the case. And that was one of my, lessons, like being so green and new to the food industry, realizing that, you know, it's a whole different thing when you're going into retail.
Oh yeah, I know. It's, you know, you could just have the whole conversation around what's required just for the packaging component of, you know, getting into retail and being retail ready. But then there's also, you know, obviously the fact that they want to take margin, you know, they need to make money as well, and you've got to have your product priced correctly. So when you were starting to sort of field the opportunity of going into retail, and you said that you sort of launched by going into the mom and pop shops, I can imagine you would have learned a lot just by, you know, selling through that channel before you went to one of the major banners and actually tried to have a crack there. What was your approach? So you said that, you know, when you were selling, it was just a matter of you rolling up with some product and saying, hey, I'd love you to try this. I'm onto something here and it's going to take off. What was your approach to selling and where did you start?
So I would go on Google. I would search like, you know, some stores that I've already seen around in Toronto. I would also like do some Google search on like, you know, small, you know, retailers, find an email, or I would reach out to people that I knew already like in the industry or some people that I've met and get a contact from them. So networking is key. And then I would send them an email or call and see if I could meet with a buyer. And go in there, drop a sample, and then drop my sell sheet, which had the pricing and all that, and wait to hear from them. And sometimes I wouldn't, and sometimes I would. Sometimes they would be excited about it, and then I get there, and then they're like, without even trying it, they're initially excited. I'm like, what changed? And then, you know, they take it, but already sometimes leave the store knowing that it's not going to pan out to anything. And, you know, I just learned to not take it personal. Every store, every buyer, they're getting so many products and they have to make those decisions based on what's best for the store, what they think is best for the store, right? So, but yeah, that's how I just approached it. I would, even if I heard no, I would say, well, try it, or why don't you give me a shot? One of the things that helped a lot was demos. So whenever I could do a demo, I would do that on weekends and sample, because it's a new type of soup that people haven't tasted before, to, you know, earn that first customer. You know, if they can sample a little and taste it, then they know they don't have to spend that money to try something they end up not liking. So demos was a good way for a new brand to really be able to earn that customer trust. That was how I started, just knocking on doors and getting no's but still going ahead and getting some yeses and getting some support. Some of those mom and pop stores we're still in till today.
That's amazing. When you were out demoing and you were actually like having a face-to-face interaction with the consumer and you could see their expression as they were tasting it and get instant feedback. What did you learn throughout that period? And with the information, what did you do with it?
That was really great because it really helped me understand the customer. And then also it helped me realize some of the things that I maybe had to change. For example, like I mentioned, we had a pepper soup. A pepper soup is like a very big traditional staple in Nigeria. Like it's huge. It's just spices in a broth, kind of like how you have those soup that you use with ramen.
Yeah.
It's like a brownie broth, but it's like spices and it's really great. And we usually will have it like with meats, like goat meat or fish.
Yeah.
And sometimes with chicken, but mainly the main meat we'd use is fish or goat meat. And goat meat was like a no-no because it's like expensive. Plus it's like very a unique type of meat. So I thought, okay, I'll use fish. And so I could launch with that. And I found like from doing demos and just that product itself, even though it was great and it tasted great, a lot of people didn't want to try it because they're like, ah, fish, I'm suspecting it's going to taste fishy. I'm allergic to fish. Or like, you know, there's some things I didn't consider about like, oh, okay, how can I scale this? And do I want a fish soup? Right. And so getting people to try during demos was hard. I can't imagine it just being on the shelf on its own. And so that was learning for me where I'm like, okay, maybe this brand. And I noticed as well, most of the people buying it were Caribbeans, Afro-Caribbeans, or Asians because they're already used to fish being in a brothy situation. Most Caucasians want their fish dry, grilled, like not in like
battered.
A brown, like a water.
So
like it's in a muddy water or something. So it was a little off-putting to them. So I realized, oh, wow, that's a lesson learned. And so when I reintroduce the pepper soup, it's going to be chicken, like safe meat that, you know, my main customer likes, right? So that's some of the kind of things that I learned, you know, interacting with the customers. But it was just an amazing thing, which I really miss. I used to kind of be stressed out about going to demos because you had to pack, you had to warm up stuff and all that. But now since 2020, I haven't done one demo. And so it's like, you don't realize what you have until you lose it.
Yeah, for sure.
And for a new brand, a small brand, demos is like a huge, huge part of success. Yeah. And not having that anymore has been really, really... has affected a lot of small brands for sure.
Yeah. And I totally I've heard that from so many people. You know, a real common thread on this podcast is the value in starting in a farmer's market because you do really get an opportunity to do a face-to-face and the customer validation and feedback is instantaneous throughout that period. Yeah. And an actual fact, when this show goes to air, which will be a Friday morning, this week on Tuesday and Wednesday, I was fortunate enough to go along to Andrea Gray Grant's Good to Grow conference and trade show, which was held here in Vancouver. And at the trade show, there were 37 local BC vendors, everybody in the same phase as you. You know, they may have been operational for, you know, a couple of years and they're just starting to hit the retail shelves and they're in the process of growing and expanding, or it could be a startup. And there were some businesses there that, you know, were like, you know, 6-7 months old, like really, really fresh. And it was awesome getting in front of them and, you know, listening to their stories. Everybody's just passionate, just like you, you know, having a taste of their product, getting feedback on it, just having a chat about the mechanics of the business, just like we are today. It was really, really cool. But there's so much that you can learn in those early stages of your business. And I can imagine without having the opportunity to demo or to get to a farmer's market due to the lockdowns that you've especially been under in Toronto would have proven extremely challenging. So how did you get around that?
I don't know, just prayer, to be honest, and doing more on our Instagram, trying ways to just show customers that we are here and you can use us for this. It's just been trying to work on our digital presence. That's the only way. And the crazy thing is that we launched, so even though we started, like, you know, when I say I launched in December 2018, I wasn't actually in physical stores in 2018. I was like officially like in stores like maybe by, maybe December or like January 2019. And so that year was kind of like a learning year. It was just doing things in small batches, a couple of stores. And then by late 2019 was when Sobeys had said, had given us interest to list. But they said you have to, at the time I was in plastic tubs. And so they had said, you know, we're moving away from single use plastic tubs or, you know, clear plastic, whatever. If you can move into glass jars or pouches, then we'll consider listing. So I kind of almost had to do like a rebrand, relaunch, all that. I was working on it for a while, late till, you know, late 2019 into 2020, figuring out my whole new packaging and all that stuff. And then using that opportunity to discontinue some of the brands that I didn't want to go ahead with. The SKUs.
Yeah.
The peanut was a tough one for me though, because it was our bestseller and I really love that recipe.
Yeah.
But if you want to scale, you have to make some of those decisions.
Yes.
But yeah, to answer your question, it was just, you know, trying to figure out ways whereby I could just keep the brand name in people's mouths. And we launched Sobeys Whole Foods this year because in 2019, 2020, I wasn't expanding as much because I just stayed in some of the small stores. So I was really not, there wasn't much growth in 2019, 2020, because I was really focused on my rebrand since I'd proven that there was a need or want for it.
Yeah.
So I would say 2020 was my relaunch, basically. I relaunched in 2020, relaunched the new packaging, relaunched the SKUs, updated my website, launched our Shopify, everything in this year.
Yes.
It's really been a tough journey. Because everything happened in the pandemic. But what I do is raise my hands at every opportunity, right? So every opportunity I get, like talking to you today and your listeners hearing about it, super, is a great opportunity. And thanks for the platform to do that.
You're welcome.
But, you know, speaking at this event, you know, coaching people about like the African community, they come to me a lot of the time and like, oh my God, how did you do it? Because it seems impossible to them you're in Sobeys and you're in Whole Foods. And I tell them it's not impossible. But the reason why it seems impossible, because there's like, I'm like a unicorn, right? Like there's no one else, right? So I have to like share my knowledge and I'm always open to doing that. And so in doing that, I'm creating publicity for the brand. And that's why I've been lucky to be in like a newspaper. And I've been in Toronto Star. I've been in like, you know, a Canadian grocer magazine as a people to watch and a lot of publications without doing any PR. Mm-hmm. I've been my own PR. And so that has helped with our sales and our brand visibility. But there's still a lot more that we can do to be able to compete with the brands that have a limitless amount of funds to do ads and all that.
Yeah, I hear you. Actually, that's one thing that I definitely noticed, like you are not afraid to get out there and be the face of the business. And, you know, throughout a few conversations that I've had, that's been a real challenge for a few of the people, you know, getting out there, being the face of the business, putting themselves out there can be really scary and really daunting. How did you get around that? Did that come naturally to you or is that something you had to work on?
I knew, so I don't know if it's natural or it's just instinctual to just do it, because I know that if nobody else is going to speak for me, for my brand, and because I know there's that education aspect, I need to be an advocate. And for me, there's a passion to it, like I said, to be able to make people realize that this is a problem. It's not even just the fact that, okay, there's no African products. A huge population of immigrants, Black immigrants to Canada, over 60% of African descent. But where are we? How is Canada like making this home for Africans? What are we doing? What is the government doing to support the growth of like African food, culture, music, all that, all those things that will help us make Canada feel like home, right? So it's something to just like create more exposure and make people realize, wow, there's an untapped market in Africa where people can actually support brands like mine to really develop, you know. So, you know, yes, you know, I've applied for grants, gotten some grants, but I would wish that there is this understanding or enlightenment that the government would even have while they're saying, wow, there are so many immigrants from Africa. What can we bring from Africa and import here? What businesses can we develop that will actually create jobs here for Africans? Because it's you know, it's true. Like, you know, I'm sure you've gone to your local Whole Foods, grocery stores and everything. You've probably never seen anything African. I haven't. But there's some Asian foods. There's Chinese, there's Asian, there's Indian.
Yeah.
You know, that Asian category is developed.
Yes.
there's some Caribbean, but yep. nothing really no. African. And
I've got to say, continent. I haven't come across it. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a whole continent of diverse foods, diverse cultures.
Yeah.
But yeah, we need help to be able to get there.
Yeah. No, that's a really great statement. Have you come across Myra Mayo from Bake in a Minute?
No, I haven't.
Ah, that's right. I had her on my podcast on episode 33, and I was introduced to Myra by Naya Shanalia from Switch Grocery, who was on a few episodes prior.
Oh, yes, yes, I know her.
Yeah, Myra's kicking some goals, and she has got a beautiful pre-mixed baking flours that she does. They're all keto. And yeah, she's from African descent as well and came out awesome. Here and yeah, got a story very, very similar to yours. And I'm sure that she's probably got the same challenges as you as well. And I would be happy to introduce the two of you because you've both got businesses that are, you know, very, very similar stages. She's listed on Amazon and selling down into the States as well and extremely well versed.
Awesome.
Yeah, she's
That's
doing
fantastic.
Some really good work. So after the show, I'd be happy to provide you a warm
yes,
introduction.
Yes, please, of course. I'm always always happy to meet other Africans in the industry. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you said, the more we can all support each other, the better.
Yes. Yes, for sure.
Cool. So you mentioned before the grants that you've been lucky enough to be successful in being awarded with. And obviously that would have helped you gain a lot of momentum and grow quite rapidly, I'd imagine. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that.
So one of my goals in 2020, because I knew I was going to change my packaging and you know how it is with packaging. You have a minimum order
MOQs.
Quantity.
Yeah.
MOQs are crazy. And I'm like, okay, to be able to do the pouches, I have like, you know, I'm already spending $20,000 in for I have four SKUs. I already have like a lot of money already gone into the pouches tied up. I haven't even done product. And so I'm like, where am I going to get this money? I'm going to have to get like, you know, line of credit or get a loan. And you know how it is in the industry. The food industry is not the most friendly industry that banks would give loans to. So it will have to be dependent on my own personal credit and all that stuff. So so one of my goals in 2020 was, as I'm doing my relaunch, I need to find free money as much as I can. So I kept doing research. And I would say that some of the unfortunate things that happened in 2020 with George Floyd and the Black Lives Matter and all that happening, there was a lot of focus on BIPOC and Black supporting Black businesses.
Yeah.
And the bulk grants that have been awarded have been based off on that. So it was a blessing in a way. The unfortunate incident created opportunity. And so when the first grant that I got, which was what helped me not be in a lot of debt to be able to get my packaging, do my package design, all that stuff, create my Shopify, was from a law firm called Castles. They're actually in Vancouver and Toronto. Amazing law firm. And they created this grant for Black-owned businesses. And I was the first recipient. They also did it this year for businesses, I believe, in Calgary. I applied, told my story. During my interview, I was myself. I presented the brand. I showed them, like, you know, my new packaging that I was working on, all that stuff. And they just loved the brand. Yeah. And at first, in my mind, they weren't really clear on how they were going to share the pot of money, because I guess all different lawyers put in the money and then they had a pot of money. I thought maybe if I get $10,000, I'll be so happy. But I got the full grant. Like, I was awarded the whole $74,000.
Holy moly.
Yes. Because they really believed in it super, and they really believed in the grant and in it. And I was lucky enough to be in the committee to make the decision for the new entrepreneurs that came in. And I realized how hard it is to make a decision on who to award a grant.
Yeah.
And this year they had a bigger pot, so they divided it between more Black-owned businesses. But for them to make that decision, I was so honored. It made me, I mean, aside from the fact that last year when they awarded me, I was honored, but like to actually be part of the committee making that decision, I'm like, wow, of all the businesses, they awarded me that grant. Like, that is amazing. And it sometimes when you're awarded the grant, it's more than the money. It's because people see the vision. It means that people, a committee of like talented people come together and say, this business has some traction, this business has a great vision. And so that gives you some confidence as well. Like, okay, there are people who see this as a business with a lot of potential. And so, but as you know, like, you know, $20,000 goes there, you do this, you do packaging, you do production, you have your net 45 days and you have to do another production and you're scaling and you're growing. And, you know, it seems like a lot of money, but it goes really fast, right? So it's something that you're continuously always looking for money that you can apply towards the business. So I'm still always applying for grants. And I got, recently I applied for another BIPOC grant through the DMZ that not only comes with the grant, and one of the good things about the other grant was that it not only came with a grant, it also came with pro bono, like lawyer services, which was great for me. But this grant as well that I just got through the DMZ and Ryerson University came with $10,000, but as well with mentorship and some training and all that, which is great. I had one of my one-on-ones with a mentor today and it was fantastic. So
yeah,
access to mentors, because as an immigrant, I don't have a huge network. I'm just building my network. I don't have parents who have established themselves in Canada that I could lean on if this fails. So I need mentors. I need people that, you know, can support me because I don't have friends and family here that are already my social network that already helps me even reach a huge amount of people. So I'm very, very, I'm very particular about not just applying for grants, but also finding ways to get mentors and my network expanded. But yeah, that's how I just applied. I've applied for others before I got that grant. And that's one thing I want to tell anyone listening. Before I got that grant, I applied for many and I got declined. And even when I was applying for that, I was like, this is just another one. Who says I'm going to get this one? Like, this is like, but I just kept applying. And as I was applying, I was developing my story better. I was telling, you know, refining my story and developing it better. So by the time I actually got the one that I got, my story was well developed and it was so keep applying. Don't give up because you don't know the ones you're going to get. And that's basically how.
That's great advice. You know, going through the process of, you know, these applications and refining your story is very, very similar to people who consistently review their business plan and iterate on their business plan and refine it over time. And as the business is changing and adjusting as well, there's a lot of value in that. What would you consider are the critical pieces that have made you successful?
I would say being yourself. Just being, not trying to paint this, being human, especially Canadian grants. Like Canadians, we're very, like, we love to also hear a story. I play a lot on the fact that the truth of my story, being an immigrant, being a female, being Black, that is a lot of demerits in society. But that is also one of the key reasons why people want to help me, right? So your disadvantages, your disabilities, right, are some of the reasons why people want to help you. And so you need to be able to express that and don't be shy to say, hey, you know, I'm a visible minority. Hey, I'm a woman. I need help, right? Don't be shy to express that and say it in the most natural way possible, right? It's not, don't see it as a negative and don't say that, oh, I'm not trying to play that card. Play that card because that is why organizations are set up. Grants are given by the government, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars of grants are given by the government to help people like me. And so you need to be able to speak out and say it as naturally as possible. Tell your story, be authentic. And that's what has helped me with the grants that I've gotten. I've just been myself and not painted this, like, you know, beautiful picture that isn't the reality. I've told, you know, people, like, if I don't get this money, I don't know if this business can go on, like, because it's a great idea. But without funding, without support, without a network, without, you know, parents that I can rely on to maybe take a loan on their house, like, I don't have anything to lean on. So I express that, but also express what I've achieved. I tell people, people like, oh, there's no grants. well, what have you invested in yourself? You expect somebody to take out money and invest in you, but what have you done to invest in yourself? Have you taken courses? Have you worked another job so you could save up to actually put money into the business? Because people want to see traction. People want to see potential, especially in the food industry. It's not just an idea. It's not an algorithm. It's a physical product. People want to see something, have something, have invested in your packaging or something that you can show, have some samples. And then I could see it visually. I could taste the product and it's not just air, right? So you have to really invest in yourself as well. Educate yourself, invest in yourself, and then people will see it and want to invest in you.
Yeah, no, that's totally true. And I think that's probably the secret to life, isn't it? Just being authentic and true to who you are. It's all we've got to work with. It's all we've got to work with. And how tiring would it be to pretend to be something that you're not, you know? You dropped in earlier that you are now working with a co-packer. And I can imagine that would have been a pretty critical decision that you would have made, you know, to get off the tools, out of the kitchen, and shift the trust of your creation into somebody else's hands. So at what point did you know that it was the right thing to do for your business? And how did you go and find a co-packer that aligned with both your vision and with the expectations that you had around the product that they were going to create for you?
So number one, I didn't even have a choice because to go to Sobeys and some of the big stores, they want you to be in a CFIA facility. And being that I was in a shared kitchen, I couldn't sell to Sobeys. Being in the shared kitchen that I was. Secondly, I was tired of cooking and buying ingredients and forgetting that I was out of onions, and in mid-cooking, stirring the kettle, I had to rush to nearby No Frills, Loblaws and buy some onions. So I was tired of that, managing the inventory, the ingredients. I didn't want to deal with that anymore. I wanted to focus on growing the business strategically. So I didn't want to be working in the business. I wanted to be working on the business, as they say. So it was an important decision for me to make, but it was also difficult to find a co-packer that would want to work with my unique kind of product. Then another thing as well was it was quite expensive to create Hearty Soups. Remarkably expensive. Like I didn't realize, like, some of the co-packers would give me a price. I'm like, what do you expect me to sell this for? Like, are you serious? Because they were Hearty, and that was what I wanted. I didn't want to be just broth, water, and vegetables. I wanted it to be like a casserole, like you said. So that was, you know, a huge part of it. Took me months to find a co-packer. Part of the issue with the difficulty finding a co-packer was because I was also still holding on tightly to my peanut recipe as well. And so once people heard peanut, they were like, not, can't work with you. So that was a difficult decision to lose that that recipe for a time, because I still have customers today asking for the peanut and when it's coming back. But it was an important decision for growth and to hand that off. I worked with a different co-packer for a while, but I finally found another co-packer, and they're being great. It's a continuous work in progress to find ways to make the pricing better. I think that's one of the things that I struggled with. And I say this, and I express this all the time to people, so they don't make the same mistakes I made. Not being knowledgeable and thinking I needed to compete on price and not on the quality of my product. Competing on price is not the best way to win. You compete on the quality and what the customer is going to get right from your brand. And so I thought, hey, it's 500 ml, but it's 500 ml of Hearty Soup. It's not water. My 500 ml is basically 1 liter of somebody else's brand. And so I'm competing on price. I'm thinking, I don't want to be, if they're selling 1 liter for $9.99, I have to figure out a way to still sell my own under, because it's 500 ml. I shouldn't sell at the same price. It's not going to make sense. But then my costing are higher than theirs, right? So thinking that, oh, you know, it's this price now. In the future, when I scale, my costs are going to go down. That is the wrong approach. And mm-hmm. so if you're listening to me and you're launching a brand, look at your numbers. Don't think, yes, your prices will go down, your costing will go down, but then your operational costs are going higher, mm-hmm. right? Because the bigger you grow, the more employees you have. So yes, your costs go down, but then other things go up, right? So don't try to compete on price. Think about the value you're bringing to the customer. Think about your brand. Like, for example, my packaging, you mentioned the color, the vibrancy. I spent a lot on creating that image of what Itsupa is and what Africa is to me. You see the image of Africa, the hunger, the poverty. But for us, Africa is vibrant, it's colorful. Our prints, our music is hot, it's spicy, it's vibrant. And so yeah. the music, everything. And that's what I wanted to tell a story through the packaging. Mm. And I wanted it to be attractive. And I spent, you know, the packaging is not the cheap pouch that you could easily get. Like, you know, it's a little bit more expensive than the regular pouch. And so even just for my packaging, I'm already more expensive than even some of the bigger brands. Mm-hmm. And so how am I competing on price? I have to compete on the value and the story behind mm-hmm. my brand. And so that was a huge learning moving to a co-packer for me, because I was still trying to price kind of like how I was when I was selling on my own. Mm. And hoping that things would get better. But things have actually gotten worse, because with COVID, the price of meat has gone up, and a co-packer keeps nudging me and saying, Lola, our prices are going up. So I think plan to have buffers, plan to just price your stuff right. It's easier to reduce your price in the future than increase it. So yes. that's a lesson that I would like to share with everyone, that I'm not shy to say is a huge lesson that I've learned. Launching and moving into the bigger space.
I love hearing that. And you've just absolutely mirrored everything that Andrea Gray Grant said on her episode on, which was episode 21 as well. Yeah. You got to go out to market knowing yeah. that what you are putting out there is going to be valuable to somebody, and that they're going to be willing to pay for it as soon as they taste it. And, yeah. and the other thing as well is, here at Foodpack, obviously working at a packaging company, and you know, one of the things that we always say is that your packaging is almost guaranteed to be one of the first interactions that anyone's going to have with your yep. product. So yep. you need to nail it right from the start. And it's really obvious mm-hmm. that you have spent a ton of time and energy working to build a brand around your product. And in my opinion, and I haven't held your bag yet, but just being on your website, you've absolutely nailed it, because it encompasses okay. everything that you know you've got in your story. Let's sort of roll into Lola, the founder. Now, mm-hmm. you're wearing a lot of hats within the business. Mm-hmm. What do you focus on day to day? And where do you find your strengths and weaknesses are, and how are you sort of working to bolster them right now?
Okay, so focusing on day-to-day right now, my focus is just finding ways to just grow the brand within this difficult time with COVID, and retailers also trying to figure out their strategies. So things are running simultaneously, but not necessarily, like kind of in parallel, but not necessarily together. So
yeah.
retailers are trying to figure things out. I'm trying to figure out how I can get on that train. Mm-hmm. And so as a new brand, and so it's just right now trying to figure out, especially our digital presence. You know, I'm trying as much as possible to collaborate. I started a project where I look at myself as a small micro brand influencer, because I'm a small brand, and I'm like, okay, I can create recipes with other bigger brands that have recognition and create like a giveaway or a recipe with them. So I approached, you know, in July, I started sending emails to some other bigger brands that have like maybe 20K, 10K followers. Mm-hmm. And I just launched my first giveaway on Tuesday, actually, with some really good vegan brands. And we created a vegan recipe and we're doing a giveaway. And that has really been successful. So, and so that's one of the things I'm like, okay, I'm a small brand, but I have some influence. And so I can think of myself as a micro influencer in the brand space, right? So created the content, and that was my pitch to the brands. I'll create the content, you just post it on your pages and create visibility for my brand. Mm-hmm. So that's some of the strategies that I've been doing my day-to-day. That's what my day-to-day is focused on, just finding ways, thinking about ways to just make the brand better.
Perfect.
I would say my strength is I'm somebody who I think I've been blessed with being able to vocalize things well and also be confident in, you know, all situations. I'm human, so I don't like to focus on star signs, but I find that a lot of things that I read about Virgos are the same. I'm a Virgo, so I'm very confident, but I can be very emotional as well. And so, but that emotion, a lot of times I put into doing things better because I want to prove to the person that said something or did something that I can do it. So I'm very passionate about this brand succeeding. And so that is one of my strengths, just my confidence and just being able to speak, be passionate. I'm very passionate about my culture and that shows in everything that I do about Itsupa. So I'm not doing it because I want to get rich or be successful, because if that's the case, like, I don't know if I'm so far this past couple of years, as you know, with food brands or starting a startup, it is very,
it's a grind,
yeah. You know, it's a grind. So, but for me, the passion is what, you know, attracts people. And, so that's I would say is my strength. My weakness is, I would say from the business side, my weakness is not knowing much about the industry.
Right.
It's a huge weakness, going in, not even knowing how to financially put together a pricing for food. It's a whole different thing, you know. I've never been someone who's good with accounting or financial, so that's a huge weakness for me. But I've been blessed to be able to find people who can help me figure that out better. So I would say, you know, not everyone knows everything, but once you know what your weaknesses are, you speak up about them. Like, yeah. I told you already, I'm like, my pricing was my weakness, but I'm now figuring that out to do better.
Yeah.
And I think figuring out your weakness and being bold to mention it and speak out about it and not be shy about it, people will come and help you and people will help you figure it out. If you keep it to yourself, then you're only going to kill yourself. And so, and it's always good to speak out really early before it's too late. If I didn't work on adjusting my pricing and doing better and just deciding that, you know what, this is my price and customers who love it will buy it, I will be struggling. And then, you know, by the time I decide, oh, I'm going to go into Metro, I'm going to go into Loblaws, it will be too late. I'll be losing money.
Yeah.
Right. So at this point, I'm not losing money because I don't have that many, you know, areas where, you know, a lot of cuts are coming from. But once you go into Loblaws and you have listing fees and you have
distribution,
distribution is bigger, you need to make sure that you have enough buffer for all that, because the food industry is crazy. There's a lot of people making money and you're not making so much.
Yeah.
Like the grocery stores are taking 30%+, the distributors are taking 25%+. So what do you have left? So you have to make sure that you are making a gross margin of about 50% if possible.
50 points. Got you. That's valuable information for everybody out there as well. So thank you very much for that insight. We've just approached an hour of our conversation and it's felt like 10 minutes.
Wow. I know. Already?
Yeah, I agree. I know your time's valuable. So we should probably wrap it up. But I do have a question that I've been asking everybody over the last couple of episodes, and the response has been really great. So if we were to fast forward a year from now and you could say to me that you'd had your best year ever, what is it specifically that you would have accomplished?
So I possibly, fingers crossed, I'm going to be, I pitched on Dragon's Den Live.
Oh, yeah. I saw that. I wanted to talk about that too.
Yeah. So many things to talk
Congratulations,
about, right?
An
hour is too short. So my dream and my hope is, from airing on Dragon's Den to garner as much publicity from that, getting to bigger retailers. My best year yet, I believe, is going to be 2021. Mm-hmm. We're going to be more retailers. We're going to have shelf-stable products that we can sell on Amazon, be in the US, and just like really grow and expand this product to become a national brand. I think that will be the vision, to be national and international across the US. I think that will be the best year yet. And just be have the opportunity to give back to the community like I've been doing.
Yeah.
Continue to be an advocate for African foods in retail.
That's awesome. Well, huge dreams, and I'm sure that you're going to make it happen because you appear to be an extremely determined person, and you're on a mission. And I think that, you know, there are some pretty vital ingredients to making something happen and bring it to fruition. Yeah. So good luck with it all.
Thank you, Hayden. This was fun, and thanks for the well wishes. I need it. I told you that just be ahead of this call that I had a meeting that kind of threw me off, and you've made me feel better. So
good.
I totally enjoyed this conversation.
Me too. Hey, listen, for everybody that's listening out there, Lola's been extremely generous and has given you all an opportunity to jump onto her website and receive 10% off with the promo code PACKH10. So it's PACK, a capital H, and then 10. And I recommend that you all jump on Lola's website and have a look, because I'm sure that you'd all agree that she's built a beautiful brand story and website around it all. Lola, if anybody wanted to get in touch and have a conversation with you about anything that we discussed today, what would be the best way to get in touch with you?
So you can reach out to me on LinkedIn. It's Lola Adeyemi. And just make sure it's Lola Adeyemi with It's Super as a company, because there might be another Lola Adeyemi on there. But you can follow us as well on Instagram at It's Super, or Facebook. We're at It's Super on all the social media platforms. You can reach out to me on LinkedIn. Like I said.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for your time. I really enjoyed our conversation today.
Yeah, same here. Thanks.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening today. If you have any questions from today's episode or would like to know more about what I can do to help you achieve your packaging vision, you can reach me directly at hayden@thepackheavypodcast.com. You could DM me on Instagram at thepackheavypodcast, or we could also connect on LinkedIn and start a conversation there. I'll see you next week.